excited because the message today is really something that you can go home and start practicing today in, albeit small ways that grow over time. And I really believe that this practice of commemorating what God has done in your life has a subtle but very long-term impactful impact on your life. That calling to mind God's activity in your life regularly and reflecting on it in important ways can guide your future in really watershed kinds of ways. Your life can go one of two ways. Either you trust God in a very big moment or you don't. And that can just be a huge fork in your life. And so by setting up these symbols that call to mind God's previous involvement in our lives, we can guide our future down a path of trust, of faith, and of obedience. So to start, I want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 7. And the reason that I want to turn here is because it's not the first place, but it's where the term Ebenezer comes from. And so my message today is about raising Ebenezers. And I'm going to abstract and generalize a little bit on what Ebenezer is. But first, let's establish what it is literally. So I'm going to read from verse 3 down to the end of the chapter, or close to. And Samuel said to all the house of Israel, actually a little bit of background first. So the Philistines have captured the ark and it's brought confusion on them and they've tried to get rid of it and they've sent it back to the Israelites. And now the Israelites once again have the ark. It's in Kiriath Jearim, and the Israelites go up to the city of Mizpah. And the Philistines see it as an opportunity. They're gathered there. They see it as an opportunity to attack them. And so that's where we pick up here. And Samuel said to all the house of Israel, "If you are returning to the Lord with all your heart, then put away the foreign gods and the Ashtaroth from among you, and direct your heart to the Lord and serve him only. And he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines." So the people of Israel put away the Baals and the Ashtaroth, and they served the Lord only. Then Samuel said, "Gather all Israel at Mizpah, and I will pray to the Lord for you." So they gathered at Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said there, "We have sinned against the Lord." And Samuel judged the people of Israel at Mizpah. Now, when the Philistines heard that the people of Israel had gathered at Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. And when the people of Israel heard of it, they were afraid of the Philistines. And the people of Israel said to Samuel, "Do not cease to cry out to the Lord our God for us, that he may save us from the hand of the Philistines." So Samuel took a nursing lamb and offered it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. And Samuel cried out to the Lord for Israel, and the Lord answered him. As Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to attack Israel. But the Lord thundered with a mighty sound that day against the Philistines and threw them into confusion. And they were defeated before Israel. And the men of Israel went out from Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and struck them as far as below Beth-Kar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Shen and called its name Ebenezer. For he said, "Till now the Lord has helped us." So the Philistines were subdued and did not again enter the territory of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. The cities that the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel, from Ekron to Gath, and Israel delivered their territory from the hand of the Philistines. There was peace also between Israel and the Amorites. So the Philistines come against Israel, and Samuel cries out to God on Israel's behalf, and God rescues them, and his response is to set up a stone, and he calls it Ebenezer. So in my Bible, I don't know about in yours, but mine has a footnote for Ebenezer. It's also the name of a city, but it's it says here that it means stone of help. Okay, so God rescues the Israelites, and Samuel responds by setting up this, literally a stone, that symbolizes how God has helped. Okay, so that is literally what an Ebenezer is. It's a stone that represents God's help for his people. And there are a few reasons that I think Samuel does this and that similar things are done elsewhere in the scripture, and we'll turn to those. But first, I want to say that this idea of raising an Ebenezer, of raising a memorial to something significant in our lives, is something that we all do very naturally. So examples would be, we have at our home a little stuffed polar bear. And when our son Joseph died, when Sarah miscarried with him, someone had sent that to us. And it was, for whatever reason, it resonated with us. And so we named it Joey after our son Joseph. And that is an Ebenezer of sorts. It's a symbol of that calls to memory that experience in our life. Another example is that polar bear theme kind of took off. I don't know if it's my wife's subconscious association with me as a Canadian or what, but we also have a puzzle in our living room that's framed that is a mama bear with two little polar bear cubs. And she did that after Anastasia was born. So I think that there's another symbolic representation of that experience of loss and then birth. And so that puzzle that's now framed and acts as a piece of art on the wall is another type of Ebenezer that has been raised to just recall that event. Above our bed, we have a sign, just a little plywood sign from our wedding that says, "Welcome to the wedding of Malcolm and Sarah." And so that's another important event in our life that we want to commemorate, we want to call to mind often, and we want to focus our attention on. And so we've put that up above our bed. One final example is we do this on a societal level too. So the obelisk at Bunker Hill is something that society has obviously deemed to be worth remembering, important to remember. And so that in a very literal sense matches kind of this concept of a stone of remembrance, not a stone of help in the sense of Jehovah has helped us, but it's a stone that calls to memory a particularly important event. And I think that we do this so naturally because we are forgetful people and we're easily distractible. And so these symbols, these Ebenezers, these items, they help us to remember and to focus on what we value most. So in the case of my family, it's, you know, marriage and family is, you know, top values. And so we commemorate those things. Society at large very much values the independence and the national identity that Bunker Hill represents. And so the obelisk has been raised there. The Israelites want to commemorate their salvation from the Philistines through the hand of the Lord. And so they raise that there. So a really good example of, I think, this forgetfulness and distractibility that's innate in humans really stood out to me as we've been going through the book of Exodus in our family devotions. And you don't need to turn here. I'm not going to read through it, but I'm going to turn here just to jog my memory a little bit as to the storyline here. But it just baffles me how often it seems that both Moses and Pharaoh in the Exodus story seem to either forget what has just happened or are just not focusing on it, and they're focusing on something else and act in ways that seem kind of irrational. So to begin, God appears to Moses in a burning bush. And he basically tells him what's going to happen. He says, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh. I'm going to lead my people out of Egypt. Pharaoh's heart's going to be hardened. But you will tell him that if you don't give me my firstborn, Israel, I will take your firstborn. And he tells Moses, I'm going to lead you out of Egypt. And he's just appeared to him as a burning bush, which is, by all accounts, incredible. And Moses' reaction is to go, no, don't send me. It's if, you know, a burning bush has just told you this is going to happen. What are you focusing on that is leading you to say, no, don't send me? So then he does indeed go. And we know that, of course, the plagues come. And the plagues, it kind of reads like they're all happening right back to back, but they're actually all happening over, you know, a period of time. There are seasons in between, it seems, where, you know, the hail strikes one crop, and then the next plague is not until the next crop comes in. So there are seasons that are passing in between these, between the hail and the locusts in particular. And each time Pharaoh is hardening his heart. It's like he forgot what happened last summer. It's like he forgot that, you know, hail just destroyed all the crops, or he forgot the frogs, or he forgot the pestilence or whatever the case may be. And he continually hardens his heart. And then he finally comes to his breaking point when during the Passover and lets Israel go. And then after Israel has gone, he changes his mind. It's like his eldest son has just died. The firstborn in all of Egypt have just died. He's gone through these 10 plagues and now he's changing his mind. Is he not? I mean, what's going through his mind? Has he forgotten about those? Or has he just completely shifted his focus to something else? After the Passover, God commands Israel to commemorate it every year with a feast. And he tells them to roast a lamb with bitter herbs, and that's a very not tactile, a very taste, it's a very tangible, experiential reminder of the event, because God knows that just as Pharaoh and Moses have gone through this distractible and forgetful experience, Israel is going to do the same. Israel is going to forget how God delivered them by a mighty hand. So he institutes this feast. And so that brings me to my first kind of minor point here, is that Ebenezer, this idea of an Ebenezer as I'm talking about it today, is not simply an object. It's not just literally just a stone, but Ebenezers, they can take different forms. That's the kind of the argument that I'm going to base a lot of my message on today. So it can be either an object, whether it's a picture or a stone or an obelisk, or it can be a ritual. And don't get spooked out by the word ritual. All I mean by ritual is an activity that we perform with some level of regularity that we've given certain meaning to. Okay, there's no spiritual underworld to that or anything like that. So with that broadening of the understanding of what an Ebenezer is, it's not just a stone, it's a class of objects or activities that we do to remember certain things. I'll add on to that, that Ebenezers they're symbolic. So they're not sacramental. And what I mean by that is that they don't have a supernatural, they don't affect the supernatural in and of themselves. they don't have, they're not imbued with any special power beyond the power that they have to remind us and to focus us on what is most valuable. Okay, so we are forgetful and distractible people. So we set up objects and rituals that serve to remind us of what we value most. And those symbols are merely symbols. They don't in and of themselves have supernatural powers. So I think that Ebenezers, under that definition, serve at least three very important purposes in focusing us and reminding us. And the first way is that they simply remind us, literally, of what we are prone to forget. So in Exodus 13, as I was mentioning, let's read that and talk about or see how God commands Israel to keep the Passover, the feast of unleavened bread. Then Moses said to the people, so this is after the institution of the Passover and the Exodus. Moses said to the people, "Remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of slavery. For by a strong hand the Lord brought you out from this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Abib, you are going out. And when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen with you, and no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory. You shall tell your son on that day, 'It is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt.' And it shall be to you as a sign on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep the statute at its appointed time from year to year." When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and shall give it to you, you shall set apart to the Lord all that first opens the womb. All the firstborn of your animals that are male shall be the Lord's. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb, or if you will not redeem it, you shall break its neck. Every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. And when in time to come your son asks you, "What does this mean?" you shall say to him, "By a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt from the house of slavery. For when Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all the males that first opened the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a mark on your hand or frontlets between your eyes, for by a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt." So those are two pretty significant rituals, you could call them, that God commands Israel to keep. The first is the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is a 7-day feast where they're changing their diet in terms of not eating any leavened bread. And then there's also this devotion of the firstborn from every womb to God. Every firstborn animal is sacrificed to God. That's a pretty tangible, powerful reminder. And of course, as it says explicitly, that's because the firstborn of Egypt was taken to ransom the firstborn, God's firstborn, Israel. Okay, so this is a powerful set of rituals that serve in part simply to remind Israel of what has happened. And an important point here is that it's to be kept from generation to generation. So this is something that's to be done in perpetuity. The children of the children of the children are to continue doing this to remember. That's how important this Exodus is. There's a second importance of this idea of raising Ebenezers that's drawn out here. And I want to illustrate it again with another passage. But one of the things that God says is that I'm commanding you to do this so that when your son asks, you tell him this. You tell him that this is what happened. So in this case, the sacrifice of the firstborn and the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, is a catalyst for teaching children. It's a vehicle for passing on the most important, most valuable stories and the salvation that those stories tell. So this is illustrated again very clearly in Joshua, another familiar passage here, Joshua 4. You can go ahead and turn here. So in Joshua 4, the Israelites are crossing over the Jordan. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and command them, saying, 'Take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight.' Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, 'Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, what do those stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever.' And the people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as the Lord told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to the place where they lodged and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day. For the priests bearing the Ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people passed over in haste, and when all the people had finished passing over, the Ark of the Lord and the priests passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel, as Moses had told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. And the Lord said to Joshua, 'Command the priests bearing the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan.' So Joshua commanded the priests, 'Come up out of the Jordan.' And when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they encamped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones, which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, 'When your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know. Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever.'" So here, again, it's made explicit that the purpose of setting up these stones is to teach the children. The children will come and they'll ask, "Dad, what do these mean?" And he'll be able to tell them that these are from the Jordan when God parted the waters to deliver us into the promised land, just as he did the Red Sea, which we commemorate indirectly through the Passover. There's another, I think, important insight here, and that's that the 12 are commanded to take a rock up on their shoulder. So this is not just a little pebble. This is a big rock. And I think the point here is that, well, two points. The first is that making these Ebenezers, they should require some kind of effort, some kind of input. They're significant things, and they should take some level of effort to create. And I think that the more important thing is that they're enduring. I think that the fact that the rocks are big, and it says that this shall be a memorial forever, is important. So they're big stones because these Ebenezers, these memorials, are not meant to be something that's here today and gone tomorrow, but for generation to generation, we want them to endure so that our children can ask us and our children's children and their children. Okay, so that's the second purpose of the Ebenezer. The first is that they simply remind us of what we're prone to forget. And the second is that they are catalysts for teaching. Teaching primarily our children, but not only our children. At the end of the chapter here, it says, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. So not only do these Ebenezers act as a catalyst for teaching our children, but they're opportunities to teach other. If you have some kind of Ebenezer, whatever it may be, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. If you have one of these in your house or somewhere prominent, and it's natural that somebody's going to ask you, what does that mean? And that is a great opportunity to testify to God's faithfulness in your life and his power in your life. Okay, so Ebenezers are a catalyst for teaching our children and others. The third purpose that Ebenezers serve, I'm not claiming that this is exhaustive, but I have three here because that's easy to remember, is that like trail markers, like you might experience on a hike, they tell you which way to go. Okay, and that's this kind of idea of watershed moments in your life where you're not sure which way to go. The hope is that having an Ebenezer there will direct you down the path of faithfulness. And so I don't want to spend too much time reading. I've already spent quite a bit of time just reading. But let's turn to Deuteronomy 6 and we'll read part of it. Because again, it exemplifies this concept of directing the conduct of the people of Israel. And there's another point that I want to draw out here. Deuteronomy 6. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And when the Lord God, your God, brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob to give you, with great and good cities that you did not build, and houses full of all good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you did not plant, and when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. It is the Lord your God you shall fear. Him you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are around you. For the Lord your God in your midst is a jealous God. Lest the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you, and he destroy you from off the face of the earth. So here he's commanding the Israelites to write these commands on their doorposts, to bind them on their arms, to put them as a frontlet in front of their eyes. If you don't know what a frontlet is, I had to look this up. I've read it many times, but I didn't actually know what a frontlet was. It's basically a little box that you have little scrolls that are curled up inside with the scriptures on them. So it's literally just a little box of scriptures that you wear on your forehead. And the point there is to just keep your focus, to keep your mind focused on God and on his commands, so that when the Israelites go into the promised land and they're faced with all of these very distracting things, things that are likely to lead them away from God, when they're living essentially in the lap of luxury, they're drinking out of cisterns that they didn't dig, they're drinking from vineyards and eating of the fruit from vineyards that they didn't plant, and they're living in a land flowing with milk and honey, it's very conceivable that they would lose focus on the God that brought them there, and that they would turn to worship the gods of the land. And so by binding these frontlets in front of their eyes, it's focusing their attention and their mind and their devotion to God. Okay, so just as if you're walking on a hiking trail and you get lost and you see a big stone cairn up on a mountainside, that's going to give you direction as to which way to go. And so do these frontlets in front of your eyes, these prominent markers that are meant to direct you which way to go, to not worship the idols, to not disobey God's commands, but to continue to remain faithful to his commands. So Ebenezer's remind us of what we're prone to forget. They're catalysts for teaching our children and others. And like trail markers, they direct us in the way that we should go. The idea of an Ebenezer, it's a little bit less common in the New Testament. But one, I think, very prominent example that we practice regularly is the Lord's Supper. And I said earlier that the Ebenezers, in the context I'm talking about them, are symbolic, not sacramental. So here I've got to make a caveat that the Lord's Supper does affect supernatural consequences. There is a divine dimension that we have access to through the Lord's Supper. But there's also just the purely physical, symbolic nature of it. It's not just symbolic, but it is still symbolic. And the tangible, the taste of the cup and the bread, the dryness of the bread, it reminds us of the suffering of Christ. And it's very common with the little children in particular. Just today, our daughter Anastasia was reaching for the bread, and she does it every time. And Sarah had to say, she said in Spanish. I won't try to repeat it, but no, this is only for Christians. This is the body and the blood of Jesus. And it's a teaching moment. And granted, Anastasia is far too young to understand it. But as she gets older, this is a great moment for teaching. And that's an example of an Ebenezer that is commanded by God for us to raise and to keep. But I think that there are, the pattern that I see in the Old Testament is one that allows for additional Ebenezers to be raised. So kind of the whole genesis of this message today was, as I said at the beginning, that there were elements of my testimony that I had basically just forgotten about, like pretty incredible things, like the way that God, when everything was uncertain and I didn't know whether I'd be allowed to stay in the country or not. And then the next thing I know, I get a letter saying the green card is coming in the mail. That's something that we want to have commemorated in a powerful way, because that's something that I want my children to ask about 10 years from now. I want to remember it 10 years from now, and I want my children to know about it. And one way, I think that there are different ways that we can do this. So definitely don't take what I'm saying now as a prescription, but merely a suggestion. One idea that Sarah and I had was to actually get a painting. One of the sisters in the church who's very talented, we contacted her to make a painting of an Ebenezer, but to leave room around the outside so that we can write things in as events happen in life, or maybe, stick a copy of my green card on there, or, whatever, a picture of a child, whatever the thing may be that we want to remember into the future and that we want to use as teaching moments and to commemorate and to glorify God through, they go on that painting. I've also heard of people literally using stones. So they'll have maybe in their backyard or something, they'll have a small stone altar where they'll, whenever there's a significant event, they can write something on a stone and they can add another stone to the altar. We often do it with food. We just celebrated Theodore's birthday on Tuesday, and we did that with some delicious food, and that's a ritual that many people do on their birthday, is they have some sort of special meal to celebrate life. Song is another powerful one. Think of Moses' song, think of Miriam's songs, the Psalms. David is basically recording his testimony in the form of poetry and of song. And I think that song can be another very powerful record of God's faithfulness in our life if we're talented enough to put things down in that way. And so the thing that I want to leave you all with today as I close is to ask yourself, how am I intentionally recording my testimony and God's faithfulness in my life in a way that will bring it to my mind when I most need to be reminded of God's faithfulness, and in a way that will encourage my children, my family, my friends to ask, to inquire and say, what does this mean? And give you an opportunity to glorify God by telling the story of how he led you through the Red Sea, how he parted the waters of the Jordan, and you walk through. And just like the trail markers are always set in prominent places, I think that these Ebenezers should also be set in prominent places. If there's something that you have to remember, if you have a project a folder that you have to bring to work tomorrow, you cannot forget it. Where do you put it? Probably right in front of the door, because you have to go past it and you won't miss it that way. And I think that these Ebenezers serve us best when we treat them in a similar way and we give them a place of prominence so that every day when we're leaving the house, we have a reminder of God's faithfulness and a witness to his power in our life. So think about that. You can think about it tonight with your family. It can be it's kind of a neat little family activity project that we're now starting in our household. How can we have a system of sorts for recording and remembering God's faithfulness? So that's what I want to encourage you all with today. Think about that. Think about how you can intentionally record God's faithfulness in your life.